Welcome to this episode of the Nothing Ventured Primer with me, Arish Shah. In these Primer episodes, we explore the insights and backgrounds of our guests to give you a bit of an idea of what they've been up to and how they got involved in the tech and venture ecosystem. Enjoy. This season of Nothing Ventured is sponsored by Odin. Odin helps angels, VCs, and founders to raise and deploy capital seamlessly. You can structure your SPVs and now run your funds, handle capital calls, portfolio management more smoothly and easily in one place. Founders use Odin to raise their entire round in a few clicks by simply sending investors a link and receiving investments immediately. Odin works with over 5,000 investors and over 150 emerging fund managers and angel syndicates globally. Head to joinodin.com to learn more. That's joinodin.com. Hello and welcome to this episode of the Nothing Ventured Primer with me, Arish Shah. Today in the studio with me, I'm really excited to have Dom and Elliot Chapman. Dom and Elliot are brothers and founders of Chapman Capital, where they acquire and scale a portfolio of boutique agencies. Prior to setting up Chapman Capital, they co-founded Social Chaps, a B2B sales and marketing agency. Dom and Elliot, great to have you in the studio with me.
Thank you
for having us.
Amazing. So we're going to jump straight in with a bit of a quick fire round of questions. So I'd love to get, for our audience to get to know you a bit better, what were your first jobs?
So my first job, I was probably 14, mm-hmm. and I was selling ice creams.
Excellent.
Selling ice creams at a beach cafe kind of thing down where locally where we live in Bournemouth, or where we were brought up. Mm-hmm. And I would, from 9 in the morning until about 7-8 at night, I'd be serving Mr. Whippies.
Amazing. I can think of lots of reason that is a very good entry point into kind of lead gen and yeah. B2B, especially given the sort of weather that we have in the UK. I'm not sure that, everyone always wants an ice
You'll
cream.
Be surprised. You'll be surprised. The Brits are, they are loyal.
We'll eat ice cream in the winter.
Any day.
Yeah, okay. I get it. And you?
The funny thing is, when he left, I took on that job. So I'm 2 years behind him.
Okay.
So yeah, exactly the same start, which
okay.
is funny.
Okay,
yeah,
yeah. So it seems like you've essentially followed each other's paths throughout.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's a lovely thing. We're going to get into that a little bit. And what did you do before, sort of directly before you got into this kind of quasi private equity strategy that you've got going
yeah,
on
yeah.
at the moment?
So I left college 18, knowing full well that I didn't want to go to university. Mm-hmm. I was quite clear on that, and I had an opportunity alongside playing football to coach. Mm-hmm. So I was able to set up a local soccer coaching school.
Nice.
Again, locally in the New Forest, and did that for 3 years. We started with obviously one school doing an after school club, mm-hmm. grew that to more than 10 after school clubs every single day. Clubs in the holiday. It was the number one regional soccer school.
Amazing.
I then got headhunted to do something very similar out in the US. Mm-hmm. And at 21, with no commitments, it was a very quick and easy yes.
Yeah.
So went out and did something pretty similar, but on a national scale, mm-hmm. Which was an incredible experience. I was responsible for about 40 coaches, mm. 650 players, mm-hmm. And then came back and was not pushed, that sounds harsh, but I was encouraged into the family business,
okay.
which was an IT management consultancy.
Interesting.
Which is kind of where mine and Dom's journey started to intertwine, because we were sharing an office and yeah. both struggling to sell the services of our two separate businesses.
Got it.
Which is where Social Chaps was first born. It was like the first version of Social Chaps was born. Helped grow that IT management consultancy to $5 million a year.
Yeah.
And exited. And yeah. that's where Dom and I formally started together.
Got it. This season of Nothing Ventured is proudly sponsored by Emerge One. Emerge One provides fractional CFO support to venture-backed tech startups and scale-ups. They work with businesses from seed to Series B that have been backed by some of the UK, US, and Europe's best venture capital funds. They provide support from capital allocation and management, KPIs and reporting, fundraising support, financial modeling, investor relations, and investor management. come check them out at emergeone.co.uk when you're scaling fast and have need of a CFO.
And so, Dom, were you following in Elliot's footsteps with the coaching, or was that a completely different journey?
No, absolutely not. I started at Specsavers when I was 18, 19 at the HQ. Yeah. And I was in the commercial team to start with, and then they launched a sort of innovation function internally, which I sort of led with a couple of others. So we were responsible for putting on hackathons, nice. Bringing partners together, coming up with new ideas across the business. So within that time, we launched a couple of apps that are still used in store today. And then whilst I was there, I started my first business, which was a design agency. Left Specsavers when I was 20 and then started the design agency full time. And then we actually spanned that design agency into a tech business. That was a recruitment technology business. So we then decided to raised a sort of seed rounds, built the product, scaled it, built a little team out in Bournemouth. And then after 3-4 years, we were turning a profit. We were profitable, but I was just so burnt out. I just couldn't run it anymore. Didn't want to raise again. Didn't want any more investors involved. So
yep, know that feeling very well.
Done with it.
Yeah.
As a team, we decided to sort of exit, recoup the money, get it back to investors, and then move on, which was a good experience. And I'm still sort of got PTSD from launching a tech business and raising at a young age.
I have so many feelings there. Yeah. as I've talked about on this podcast and kind of on my various platforms, you know, I raised some money in a tech business a couple of years ago, ran out of money earlier this year, had to pump in a bunch of money to kind of clear it up, and was expecting kind of HMRC to do what they should be doing with R&D tax credits. Didn't happen, isn't going to happen.
Yep.
So I'm now sat there going, okay, right. So this was a really expensive MBA, but in fairness, like, I've had a couple of investors say the same thing to me. They go like, you tried and it didn't work, and that's fine. But essentially you paid and other people paid for you to learn. Like, yep. I mean that, and I think that's amazing. And actually something that you've both touched on, which I wasn't aware of, and which, you know, I think we might try and explore a little bit when we talk in the main podcast, is, you know, neither of you, it sounds like, went to university. You both took an entrepreneurial route very early on in life. And I have, again, strong feelings about university and education in general.
Yep.
And I think maybe, you know, understanding kind of the rationale behind, you know what, I'm not going to go to university, or I'm education isn't for me, or whatever the reasons are, like how you made those decisions to kind of jump into that entrepreneurial journey. Because I think certainly here in the UK, kind of what we build through the education system is a very, very sort of linear pathway into becoming a middle manager. Like, yep. That's what I see university as, right? Like as it stands. And obviously I and plenty of other kind of, you know, founder stroke entrepreneur types sit there and bang on about how we need better skills training in kind of school and even in university around sales, and like, how do you read a balance sheet, and what's a P&L, and, you know, how do you run a business, and how do you talk to people, and, yep. you know, all that sort of stuff. So I think, anyway, we should talk about that in the main podcast,
because
I think that's super interesting. And so what then tricks, so it sounds like you did the IT consultancy, exited that. Was that how you then decided to kind of form Chapman Capital?
Yeah, so not so much Chapman Capital. It formed the start of Social Chaps.
Got it, yeah.
Which is the pre-Chapman Capital. Mm. So Dom and I were sharing an office in Bournemouth. I was struggling to grow the IT management consultancy. I was 23, 24 at the time, and trying to sell to middle-aged men,
yep.
which... was hard.
Hard, yeah.
Really hard, because you don't have any validation, you don't have the experience, and you're trying to sell IT solutions for sort of hundreds of thousands, you know, minimum. You just don't have the credibility in the space. Sure. So Dom and I were talking, and we had to come up with ways that were creative that would get me and others in our business into the room without them necessarily knowing who I was.
Mm.
Dom had a similar issue, again, sort of young founder, trying to sell trying to get people onto the platform, onto his B2B recruitment platform. So we're both facing a similar issue. And Dom, you're probably best placed to talk about the the tech side of it, but we use that as, right, we've both got the same issue, let's try and find a solution. A
common solution.
Yeah, a common solution. We were sat next to it, we were sharing an office in Bournemouth. So it just turned, we didn't realise it was going to go anywhere. There was no incentive to ever spin it into an agency. Mm. It was just, let's solve the problem here and now. And it quickly turned into, God, this is actually, it's real good fun working together.
Yeah.
It's great sort of looking for solutions to certain problems. And thankfully, Dom's got the brain to be able to do it.
But those are, I mean, those are the best problems, or the best businesses, right? Which are spun out of an inherent problem that you are facing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Both of you are facing together. But like, you know, often founders go out and they kind of look for a problem to solve. Actually, the best problems to solve are ones that you've faced and are facing like on a day-to-day basis, right? Is that kind of how you saw it?
Yeah, and I guess that was the difference between the previous business, which is like, I want to solve a major issue in recruitment.
Yeah.
Thinking about it, I was a naive.
Well, recruitment is the issue.
Yeah, recruitment is the issue. And also, I'd never recruited before, so how did I know, really? I guess it was a fresh look on it. But yeah, when we were in the office together, I was really struggling to get in the room with HR directors, HR managers, and we just built this sort of as a team within Stemex. Mm-hmm. We built this little system which would sort of pull together data and then automatically build relationships. And you know, we plugged it into South Coast Network, and then when we both exited, we were like, right, let's do this digital agency. Had no idea what we wanted to sell, but I was like, right, I'll turn it back on then for
there's
the new...
There's something here. Yeah.
Well, it was like, I'll turn it on and we'll find new clients for this this business without still realising that the system that we built was the business.
Yeah, yeah.
And then eventually it became the business. And then I guess that's the difference between working on a business where I always say it feels like swimming against the current to with the current. And the moment that it sort of clicks.
That's clearly a very Bournemouth.
Brought
up by the sea.
Brought up by the sea. And then the moment it all clicked into place, like, you know, that's when we scaled pretty quickly at Social Chaps. I think we went from 3 of us to about 22 of us in 7-8 months with no funding. We didn't want to take investment again.
Yeah.
Didn't want to employ anybody.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think most founders, like, if they've been through the journey, the second time they launch a business, they are often very reluctant to take on any external capital as far as possible, right?
Like,
they may
need
some seed funding to get off the ground, but the problem is, the more investors you take on, the more people you're beholden to, and the more kind of impetus there is to drive the outcome for them rather than for yourselves, right?
I think Dom and I, when we started Social Chaps, in that first 12 months, it was so liberating, just us two working together. Constantly being on, and I think we are going to get into this in terms of like working with family and working with brothers or as brothers. It was liberating working with someone who's on the same page, and there was no friction. It was just it felt so easy.
By the way, that is not normal for family businesses, as I can attest to. Like, often brothers are not on the same page
Felt really, really easy.
Just
because decision making was, you know, we're aligned, our values are the same, we're on the same. Like, we're on the same mission. Any issue that we had, you know, we spent the first 10, 15 years of our life literally jumping off sofas onto each other, pretending we were in the WWE. So trying to solve any little issue around not sure what to do with this client, it was really, really straightforward. So then to layer in, do we take on any external... And that's the way we saw it, is external pressure, not external funding.
You can't do it how you want to do it. You start having to do it how they want to do it.
Exactly.
And what do you reckon you would both be doing if you weren't heading up Chapman Capital now?
I would be doing something where I'm not working for anybody.
Yeah, you know that feeling very well as well.
I think Dom and I have both realised that we are much better, I'd say, on our own. When I say on our own, I mean together.
Mm.
So if we weren't doing Chapman Capital, it would be some form of product, or it would be something else, but
another
aligned
business
together. Yeah.
Yeah. So
I couldn't work for somebody.
You both think you'd still be working together. That's that's so super cool.
And within the time of starting Chapman Capital, there's been so many failed ventures together trying to you know, get things off the ground. We tried a rum brand. We've tried alcoholic iced ice cream or iced sorbet.
Mm.
You know, there's plenty of things, sports management. We've tried so many different things. in the time of that. So, you know, if it wasn't Chapman Capital, it would have been something else.
And it's the thing, like on today's show, we're going to talk about a lot about the successes. What people don't or haven't seen is for every minor success we've had, there was four or five failures, which is standard, but it's never spoken about.
Yeah, it's the entrepreneurial journey. I mean, yeah. Like this is the point, right? I think everyone sees the success. No one sees the 10 years yeah. of kind of bleeding that goes on.
Pain.
Absolute, yeah, absolute like pain at your very core, right? It's not even surface level pain. It's sort of pain you go to bed with and yeah. wake up with in the morning. So let's talk about Chapman for a second. So it's kind of a private equity style roll-up business. So what sort of companies do you buy? Where are they based? And I think importantly, why should the companies that you do buy come to you, especially if they're looking to exit? And what do you offer them?
So the types of company that we are, or types of companies that we're interested in, are essentially and exclusively agencies.
Mm-hmm. Define an agency for me. So in your context,
a service-based business. Mm-hmm. Somebody who is, so for example, we've got marketing. Agencies, we've got e-com agencies. Mm-hmm. We were talking off air about the, you know, the finance, outsourced finance, service-based agency, which, you know, you could call it, well, it's a service-based business.
Yeah, 100%.
And we've come from that background. It's what we know. With everything that we've done, we have tried to productize and create a SaaS-like business within the service-based space. And there is a market for it. And why should people work with us? Or why, I think, why do people like having that conversation? If an agency is looking at an exit, they're typically looking either at private equity. Yep. It's largely private equity in the agency space. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't understand how an agency is run. Agencies they struggle with cash flow. Mm-hmm. It is a constant hamster wheel to try and win new clients and move away from project-based work into retainer work, and you've got to try and get the
yeah,
split
between being severely triggered here, but yeah.
Yeah. And it is this constant hammering, and it is painful.
Yeah.
And if you speak to any agency owner, they would say something similar. And I think where we come at it from a place where we fully understand that pain, we can support you on the finance side of things, and we can support you on the lead gen and sales side of things, which typically agencies and agency owners aren't as strong at. Mm-hmm. Agency owners or agencies in general,
they're subject matter experts.
Exactly. Yeah,
they know what they're doing, but they don't know how to run a
they're typically
business
better at,
often.
They're typically better at delivering their service yeah. than all the other stuff.
Yeah.
So not our core offering, but what we can say is, listen, you go and look after what you're excellent at. Let us worry about the stuff that you're struggling with, mm. and we'll really ease that pain. Mm. Because we've got the track record to be able to do so. Mm. And in 2-3 years time, rather than selling to, you know, private equity now, where you're going to be employed again, you're going to be really trying to hit certain numbers, we'll actually go on this growth journey with you. Mm. So that, I think that's probably the biggest value add that we've got right now with agency owners.
Yeah, you're hands-on as opposed to hands-off, which often most private equity are, right? And so, I mean, again, just thinking about it sort of from a technology perspective, are you then putting in kind of processes or technology? Are you able to rinse and repeat the same processes and technology into each of the businesses that you work with? Or are you having to go in and kind of understand them as standalone businesses? Or are you able to kind of use the model on a repeat basis?
It's a bit of both, actually. Like yeah. in terms of the sales, the sort of the CRM, mm. all of that side of it, most of the businesses don't really have anything in place.
Yeah. So which is not a surprise.
That is just an easy implementation training. You know, 3 months, they've got CRM. We've got a standardized sales process, all the tech in place. I think the harder side is the technology around people and managing tasks yeah. and managing delivery. But obviously the beauty is we've got the view of 7-8 agencies right now who are all doing it slightly differently. So we can
borrow from one.
We can borrow and we can share. And it's not even just the technology. It's like the people process. You know, one company might do amazing things to incentivize, you know, the staff. So we can share that with the other team and then they'll go and implement that as well. I guess it's a bit of both. For sure, the sales side of stuff needs to be set up from the start because, you know, you ask, you know, where these leads are being stored or where these prospects are being stored, and it's, you know, it's in their head or just on a notepad somewhere, which Elle's probably feeling guilty of right now because he still does it
occasionally. I mean, like, even I'd be really honest, right? So I implemented HubSpot, I think, you know, a few years ago and then never looked at it.
Yeah.
And it just didn't work for me. It didn't work for my flow. And then I started using Airtable as a product probably about, again, a year, 2 years ago, and have just been able to build my entire kind of operating system off the back of Airtable. And it just works for me as a CRM, so obviously as lead capture, but also to capture the kind of CFOs that are coming into the business, et cetera, et cetera. And I think what a lot of founders don't necessarily appreciate is when you are building a business, you're not building a business, you're building a set of processes. And that's actually what most people are buying, right? So if you can get the processes to a point where they are scaling and are easy to be implemented again and again and again, you have a playbook essentially, that's what then, you know, someone that's looking to acquire you is actually buying, right? They're buying massively. That scale and obviously the customer.
And the important thing around that is if you remove yourself, someone can pick that up 100%. Quite easily. And that's the thing about getting those processes right.
Which is actually the biggest problem with agencies. And certainly like in every conversation that I've had is like, okay, how do I extricate myself from the business? Because actually the business and I are so heavily intertwined. That, like, if someone were to come and acquire it, would they be able to actually drive the business in the same way that I do? So if you were, just as we wrap up, if you think about like two or three ventures that both of you are really excited about, either inside your portfolio or even outside that you're looking at, or that you're like, wow, you know, wish we'd have been able to kind of get in with them, what sort of business or who would those be?
I think one I'm really excited about at the moment is one we signed in August, which is 360 Brands. They're sort of a D2C e-commerce agency, but the interesting thing about that is we're supporting them in actually bringing in other brands under the umbrella. So kind of they've got their own clients, but it's what else can we bring to the table for them. Right. So we're speaking to a luxury clothing brand at the moment, you know, some drinks brands. What can we do to actually buy them and put them under the umbrella of 360 Brands? And I know the Hut Group have done a similar model, but it just works. It works great.
Yeah, that's the typical, it's like the FBA roll-up strategy that's been going on. Well, and I say that at a time where Thrasio looks like it's about to go out of business, but, you know, that was essentially the objective with those FBA roll-up businesses. You just buy small kind of Amazon brands and then, you know, obviously leverage or create efficiencies by leveraging kind of marketing across all of them, right?
What's interesting is, you know, if you would have asked us 6 months ago whether that's part of the strategy.
Of course it wasn't.
Exactly. But then you start working with, you know, with different service-based companies, you go, okay, we could actually start to leverage something else here. And then all of a sudden you're into potentially acquiring struggling brands because you've got an agency that could, in a matter of 3 months, turn it around.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, with everything that we're doing with this portfolio, this is our overarching strategy. However, we can't be fixed to that.
No, opportunistic as well.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think it's not being too... not being too fixed on, whilst this is the direction we're heading in, doesn't have to be a straight line.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, like there are always benefits to being rigid, but there are always benefits to also being flexible, right? So rigidity means that you can just use the same play again and again. But the benefit, because you're not using other people's money, is that you can also take the punts that you want to take, which I think is awesome. Dom, Elliot, really great to have understood a bit more about your backgrounds. Really looking forward to getting into it in the main podcast. But for the time being, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you very much.